May it please the court, counsel. We recognize that there is circuit precedent directly against what we're arguing in this case, and certainly two purposes of this appeal are to preserve the issue for Supreme Court review and to keep the case on direct appeal should Congress change the statute with a retroactive provision. However, there is a further purpose that we do think that the situation with respect to the mandatory minimum has changed in that the reasons justifying the prior precedents of this court have been significantly undermined, and in fact sufficiently undermined to draw those precedents into question.
But the Supreme Court has never changed its position on mandatory minimums.
No, but I would suggest that the Kimbrough case suggests that this is an area that is ripe for revisiting.
It may be, but I would call your attention to what has recently happened in a case called Vasquez from the 11th Circuit, in which the Solicitor General filed a brief drawing a very sharp line between the obligation to abide by statutory minima and maxima and the flexibility that goes along with the guidelines. And the Supreme Court vacated the 11th Circuit's decision in Vasquez and sent it back for I think they said something like further consideration in light of the position of the Solicitor General. So that's the latest tea leaf, if you will, from the Supreme Court. It's not a long opinion. It's just a paragraph. But it sounds to me like the court is really still taking the view that Congress has spoken in this area in part, and there's a place for the guidelines, but we, the courts, can't deviate from what Congress has said.
Well, I would certainly agree that there's a higher threshold with respect to making a constitutional decision than a statutory decision on 994H, and I was pleased to see that Vasquez now, I think, turns Welton into a dead man walking. The Solicitor General's brief having cited Judge Williams' opinion, dissenting opinion in Welton. I would submit that you reach a point where the rationales that this Court has given for justifying the mandatory minimum no longer hold water. And I guess the question is, does this Court have to wait for the Supreme Court to change its rulings on mandatory minimums generally in order to address an unsustainable mandatory minimum in a particular instance?
Could Congress fix this problem by raising the penalties for powder cocaine?
They could do it that way, and
there are some folks who propose that as the solution.
Right. Assistant Attorney General Brewer, which I've quoted in the brief, says the administration believes Congress's goal should be to completely eliminate the disparity, but their view is it should be to bring the crack down, basically to eliminate, take crack out of the statute.
And you're telling us, though, there's a constitutional problem, right?
Yes, Judge.
And couldn't that problem be fixed in a way that would do your client no good at all?
Yes, that's true. That's not, I think, the fix that is getting serious consideration. I think the fix that's getting serious consideration is to eliminate the powder, make all the numbers the powder numbers. That's what the bill's pending in Congress now, and the one that has been voted out of House Judiciary provides. So I think that's the proposal that everyone.
What would it take to fix the problem? Would a 20-to-1 ratio fix the problem?
Five to one? If the fix were done judicially, as you're asking.
Well, that's a good question. Certainly the degree of disparity now is so extreme that it's subject to serious challenge. If the degree of disparity were less, the challenge would be less compelling. So,
in well, terms, You're telling us that the current system is unconstitutional,
yes,
and
sir.
I'm asking you what would it take to remedy that?
Well, I suppose this court could look to the record and see the proposals that have been made, including proposals by the Sentencing Commission of 20-1 some years ago, and say if we're acting judicially, we aren't going to go the whole way, but certainly the minimum would be, for example, a 20-1 ratio based on what has been, you know, proposed by lawful authorities.
That might not be in the long-term best interest of people in the position of your client if Congress actually decided to go straight to parity.
Yes, well,
where we'd be with these 20-1 people out there.
Well, that wouldn't, certainly, of course, wouldn't preclude Congress from then going. In fact, it might prompt Congress to act. They often act after the courts act. Congress isn't acting on very much at all right now, but that's a different matter.
At the risk of asking a fairly elementary question about the way American democracy works, you're telling us there is a, quote, broad consensus in this direction. And isn't the way that that's expressed in our society by having the House of Representatives and the Senate both adopt the identical legislative language that the President then signs?
Yes, Judge. But the problem here is that a federal district court judge also says to Mr. Vila, based on the powers invested in me by the Sentencing Reform Act, I am depriving you of 10 years of your liberty. And it's incumbent upon the courts to ensure not just that that comports with statutory language and with whatever the guidelines may provide, but that it comports with the Constitution. And if the underpinnings for the rulings that have upheld this in the past have changed sufficiently, I submit it's incumbent upon the courts to revisit this question.
But, you know, to focus on your Eighth Amendment argument for a moment as opposed to the equal protection argument, the Supreme Court has been very reluctant to find that anything less than a capital sentence was excessive punishment, that the excessive punishment prong of that. They've had their excessive fines cases with punitive damages. What case can you think of where the court has said, you know, when I think of the three strikes cases and the other cases, they all are cases where the court rejects Eighth Amendment claims like yours?
You're absolutely right. That's a problem. The sort of good cases, for lack of a better term, are largely capital cases, and in the sort of three strikes types of cases, the court has shied away. And
the court's reluctant to say, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, life. I mean, in anything less than a capital case, I just haven't found it.
I can't think of I'm not aware of a specific case that would in which a non-capital sentence has at least recently been invalidated. And what we're submitting is
on Eighth Amendment grounds.
That's
anyway,
right,
on
the proportionality grounds. And what we're submitting is this case is so blatant and blunt that it's the appropriate vehicle to embark on that. And I think the Eighth Amendment is probably more appropriate than the due process, because due process is more appropriate where there isn't a specific provision dealing with that substance area, meaning the area of punishment.
Right.
So otherwise, I would rest on the arguments in my brief and reserve time for any rebuttal.
All right. Thank you very much. Ms. Yadin. Mr. Yadin, sorry.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Ken Yadin for the United States. The government would ask that defendant Vila's sentence be affirmed as issued by the district court. In this case, in sentencing Vila to the mandatory minimum sentence of 120 months imprisonment, the district court followed this court's prior decisions that imposition of the mandatory minimum sentence for violation of 21 U.S.C. section 841A1 does not violate his constitutional rights. There are two cases, of course, where this court has previously held that a mandatory minimum sentence does not violate the defendant's Fifth Amendment due process rights or and equal protection rights, as well as his Eighth Amendment protection against cruel and unusual punishment. Furthermore, in this case, the defendant has not shown why this particular sentence was not unconstitutional. So unless there are further questions, we would request that the district court's decision be affirmed.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Beal, right away. Anything further? All right. Thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? So we appreciate very much your assistance to the court and to your client. Thank you as well. We'll take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.